the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck buddies? What the fuck Nicks? What's happening? It's me, Mark Maron. How are you? How's everything? Are you okay? Is everything working out all right? I'm broadcasting from Los Poblanos. Los Poblanos is in New Mexico, Albuquerque, the historic inn and organic farm just down the street from where I grew up. It's where I stay all the time. It's almost like I'm staying in my old house. It's almost like I'm staying literally in the house I grew up in. I knew the family that owned this place when they lived here. I've talked to you about that before, but that's where I'm at. I came out here. As you can tell, I'm a little short of breath even. The altitude's a bit much. Just went on a hike with my brother, his girlfriend Julia, my old buddy Dave Kleinfeld. Went up to the top of the Sandia Mountains here, the peak. Took a hike around there. Tried to breathe in the altitude. It's weird when you get it in your mind, you know. It's all about the mind, isn't it? Before I ramble, I'm excited to tell you that Danny Trejo is on the show today. Danny Trejo is everywhere. Everyone knows who Danny Trejo is. He was in Heat, Spy Kids, Machete, the Muppet movies. He's got taco places. He's got donut places. He was in Sons of Anarchy. You know his face. He's Machete. Come on, man. He was on my show, Maron. That was an interesting day all around. But he's got a book out. And it's pretty crazy. It's really a book about recovery. Like, I could see it as a recommended recovery book. If you are trying to get off drugs or alcohol, or you are in the secret society, it's a great read. But outside of that, that doesn't really reveal itself totally until later in the book. But outside of that, the story about the time he spent in prison from when he was a young kid, you know, he did time when he was in his teens, and then on through all that insanity, the way prison works, then getting out of prison, the coincidences that led to his being in movies in the big way that he is, and then onward into afterwards and sort of maintaining sobriety and doing the work and changing your life. It's all in the book, and it's kind of a stunning book. The book is the last book I read, I think, about the complexities and nuances of existing in prison on a social level, a political level, on a survival level, was probably Straight Life, the Art Pepper autobiography that he wrote with his wife, Lori Pepper, which is a devastating account. He was a sax player, and the book is about 400 pages, and it's probably about 375 pages about heroin in prison, and about 25 pages about sax. And the big theme of the book, the ultimate message of the book, I think, the Art Pepper book at the end is, don't be a rat like Chet Baker. Don't be a rat. Chet Baker was a rat. That, you know, that's what you learn. You also learn exactly how prison works. And not unlike Danny Trejo's book, you know, ratting, again, not a good thing. But you do get a sense of what it's like to be in prison, to live in prison, and what lessons can be learned in prison, what of those lessons can help you in real life. It's sort of basically a prison-based self-help book, in a way. But the whole story is there, and it's wild to talk to Danny. It's intimidating at first. You would think it'd be scary, intimidating. And I've worked with the guy, and he's the nicest guy in the world. Seriously, a sweetheart. And a big-hearted man. But he's intensely scary-looking, and he's an intense guy, and you know his story. And I worked with him for a week, or at least 3 days, on a shoot, one-on-one, and I know him, kind of, but I was still scared to talk to him. And he came with his son. His son, Gilbert, is a film director, kind of an up-and-coming director, and he came with him. Gilbert drove him over, and Gilbert factored so heavily in the book. Like, he told Gilbert's story along with his own story long after he'd gotten sober. His son was struggling with his own addiction, and it was sort of an interesting topic for me as somebody who wrote a memoir to, you know, what respect or how much do you let the person that you're talking about know, and what right do you have? What is your story and what isn't? And it was interesting, and I brought Gilbert in towards the end of the talk to sort of include him in it. But he was bad, man. They were both, you know, bad dope fiends. So I hope you guys had a safe fourth. I hope no one lost any hands or any fingers, and you reflected on what you needed to reflect on for whatever your sense of America is. I'm in New Mexico, as you know. I'm here to see my father. My brother Craig came out, and we've been hanging out, doing the eating, doing the hanging around, spending time with the old man. He's still cognizant and functioning fairly well. Memory's still in place if you jar it a bit. The deep memory's there. I don't know how this ailment works, but it seems that the stuff this morning or yesterday or what he's trying to say right now is a little difficult. But the older stuff, he seems to be fairly able to tap back into those memories from when we were kids, from when he was younger. Weird bits and pieces. I don't know how it progresses. I'm trying to get up to speed. I'm glad that we're spending time with him. I'm glad I'm spending time with my family and with my brother. You know, for a guy like myself, you know, who had a lot of anger throughout all of my life towards my parents and towards the idea of how I was parented, or, you know, just in terms of family in general, somehow or another, I don't know, over the last year or so, maybe over the pandemic, maybe over my own experience of grief and loss, I've definitely, something has shifted in my heart and in my mind around, you know, whatever my problems were. Maybe I finally have gotten better. Maybe I'm starting to slip. Maybe I, you know, don't remember the bad things as much. And maybe I've found enough definition on my own to be grounded in who I am than to worry about what happened with my parents. I've just been able to compartmentalize it and forgive them, which I feel like I did a long time ago. But, you know, it is what it is. But I don't know. I'm able to approach both of them with a lot more empathy. Maybe it's because they're old and getting feeble, and that creates a vulnerability that maybe I didn't sense before, maybe wasn't there before. I don't know. It's sad that it has to take that, but life is weird. And but for those of you who are concerned, he's doing okay. I'm doing okay. And I'm glad I came out here. So, look, this book, Trejo, My Life of Crime, Redemption in Hollywood, comes out tomorrow, July 6th. It's a great read. I blew through it in a day. And it is a great recovery book. It is an empowering book about the possibilities and reality of being able to change your life and change how you live your life from the darkest of dark trenches of drug use and jail. Don't expect me to talk about how he got started in movies. It didn't come up. It's in the book. This is me talking to Danny Trejo. Good to see you, man.
Thank you.
You look well.
Been doing it. I've never stopped working, so I was really blessed.
Yeah, man. I didn't know if you remember me.
Are you kidding? God, I was your sponsor.
I know. It was actually, no, it was the other way around. That was the weird thing, man.
Well, that's right. You were mine. Well,
right. It drove you nuts a little bit that day. I tell a funny story about that day because your ear, your allergies were bothering you.
Yeah.
And like they were terrible. And you were like, you know, your eyes were all watery and you couldn't, you had a headache and you're all stuffed up and there were so many lines. Remember we had to put the lines all over the car. And at one point you were like, so many lines, man. And I said, yeah, I know, boy. And he's like, I haven't had this many lines in the last five movies I did. And then,
that's true.
And then he looked at me and he said, they hire me for my face.
They do most of the time. Hey, I played mean guy, Chicano guy, bad guy, tattooed guy.
I know. But it was a great role. And it was so funny because when we were acting it, I knew like it was a weird place because you had to be the guy that couldn't get sober.
Yeah.
And it was, you were like, I'm not this guy.
It was fun, though.
It was awesome. A good day. Yeah. I just remember, you know, shooting in Highland Park, and it was like walking around Highland Park with Jesus. Yeah. There were families coming to their windows, like, Machete!
God, that was funny.
Yeah, that, man. Yeah. But that must happen everywhere you go.
Yeah, it's gotten pretty
pretty crazy.
Pretty crazy, yeah.
So I ended up like really, you know, reading, you know, almost like I'm literally down to the last 10 pages and or so, like down to chapter 35 to Danny Trejo Day. Yeah. I'm glad I got through the Gilbert, your son is here with you and he looks good.
Awesome. Now,
yeah, I mean, and like I guess the thing on my mind right away is that I, you know, I've written a memoir and, you know, there were people I put in it.
Yeah.
Because it was my story. Yeah. Who got offended after.
Yeah.
Now, when you were writing this, you know, so much about Gilbert's life, about your daughter Danielle's life, about your wives' lives, did you ask them first?
No. It's a surprise.
Have they read it yet? No,
I don't think so.
No. Oh, boy.
Most of them don't like me anyway, so don't.
But Gilbert does.
My son is awesome.
Does he? Oh, he read it?
He knows it.
He's cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's the most important part.
Same thing, you know.
That Danielle's cool with it. That's good. Those are the most important ones. The rest, Maeve read it too?
Yeah. She's the one that really helped me with it because at first we wrote it and her exact words were, wow, you sound like an upper middle class white guy.
Wow.
I said, what? Dan, you missed a lot of what made you.
Really?
Because she was one of the only people I ever confided in about my mom, about my dad. We were together a long time, and we had two kids. So, you know, and
so she knew the whole story.
Yeah, you know, and she knew my mom.
Yeah,
and I remember when I took her over to meet my mom after I had a Danielle. I mean, a Gilbert.
Yeah,
she says, "I never want to go back there again." I said, "Why?" She said, "That's the coldest woman I've ever met, Dan." I said, "What are you talking about?" You
really?
Know? She's just quiet. No.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember Maeve way back then saying, you know, she's got some ugly secrets.
Oh, yeah.
And I said, yeah, she's full of shit.
Really?
Know? But she felt that her, you know, I grew up with that vibe. So after she read the book, she said, you know what? This doesn't say who you are.
Wow.
This doesn't say how you got here.
Right.
This doesn't say why you've had four wives, four divorces, three children with women you weren't married to. You know, why don't you trust women?
Yeah.
And I says, well, yeah, that's all my mom's story. No, it isn't.
Yeah.
That's yours. And so after we did it, it's funny, after I did it, it was kind of like a purge. It's kind of like because we're only as sick as our secrets, okay?
I know that,
And it's kind of like in AA, we have this saying.
I'm in. I got 22.
Oh, awesome. Okay. Yeah. We have this saying, are you sick and tired of being sick and tired?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's a place in your alcoholism that you can actually become comfortable with being sick and tired of being sick and tired.
Right.
Where this is your way of life.
You surrender to that.
And my way of life was when I walked in that house, it was like walking into a refrigerator
with your mom who wasn't your birth mom.
Yeah, no, that was my stepmom.
Right, and your dad.
You know what? My dad actually married her to take care of me.
Mm.
So basically, I didn't know it, but she was an indentured servant.
Right.
You know?
Everything
she did was out of duty, you know. She didn't like kids.
Right. Okay.
I love my pops.
Well, so initially what you had was just sort of the straight, the jail stories.
Yeah.
And then the sober stories and then the life.
Yeah.
But Maeve, who was your third wife.
Yeah. Well, me and Maeve never got married.
Oh, you never got married?
We had two kids. I should have married her.
Yeah. But she's the one that said, look, man, you know, there's this whole other part of you. That's not in here?
Yeah.
So you had to go back and tell those stories?
Yeah.
So all the stuff about your Uncle Gilbert was there?
Yeah.
But not the stuff about your mother?
No. My Uncle Gilbert, there's a part in there where Gilbert actually saved me from
killing your mother.
I was
years, and you were sober.
Yeah.
I mean, like very sober.
Yeah. I was, and I just lost my dad.
Yeah.
And I was kind of trying to be the son, you know.
Yeah, and help her out.
It got heavy, you know, because she still had her demons and was still living that life, you know. And so.
Well, let's go back because, you know, I think it's just the relationship with your Uncle Gilbert is really the defining thing.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And where did you grow up? Explain to me that part of the world.
I started growing up in, my family was lived on Temple Street. That's where my dad met my mom.
Yeah.
My mom was from Maravilla in East L.A. Her husband was in the Army. And so, you know, it was during the Zoot Suit era, and my mom, dad were both, they ran into each other in a bar. And,
yeah.
And they got together, you know. And
while her husband was off at war. Yeah.
And my dad actually went to jail then because they used to have big buffets in bars.
Yeah.
And you just would make your sandwich and stuff while you were drinking, right? And this was downtown L.A. And
30s?
Yeah. And some guy got smart with my mom, and my dad ended up stabbing him. And they left. Everybody left. We took the whole family. He took that family to Texas.
Ran off.
With my aunt.
Because he was on the lam.
Yeah, he was running.
He killed the guy?
No, he just stabbed him.
Yeah.
And I said that so nonchalant. I'm sorry. I mean, you know.
It's where you come from.
Anyway, so they were looking for him. And my grandmother said, you have to go back. You know, you can't just. He promised her that if she got him an attorney, he would never get in trouble again.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the reasons why he had so much anger towards me, because I promised every other week I wouldn't get in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, and
right.
So he came back, then went to jail for 2 years. And when he came out, I was already born.
Yeah.
I was going to be 3 years old, I think. My dad took me from my mom, and threatened everybody, and
really,
I stayed with my dad in Burbank. We lived in Burbank,
and that's when he married the woman that became your stepmom. Mm-hmm. And they had more kids.
No, I didn't have any
kids.
Just you. Yeah, just me.
And because it's weird in the story you tell in the book, you know, your real mom is only there once.
Yeah,
because you really didn't have a relationship.
Well,
with her.
I actually met her. And my sister, Diane, who I'm really close to, I'm closer to her than anybody. And when I got arrested in 1965, it came out in the LA Times, came out in the papers.
Yeah.
And that's how they found me. My mom came up to the county. I met my mom and sister in the county jail. They ended up coming. It was amazing. And my mom was gorgeous, beautiful woman. And it's funny. It was like, I hate to say this because I sound like a sissy, but we looked alike.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and I'm looking at her and I'm praying to God I don't look like her in the showers back there. Because somebody's going to try to kiss me. You know? And I mean, it was like, and my sister even said, Guy, you guys look so much.
Yeah.
But we wrote all the time during prison.
Oh, yeah.
So I wrote to her more than I wrote to my stepmom and my dad.
Oh, so that did carry on for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when I got out of prison, I went to meet her. And it was just different. It was completely different because, you know, I mean, I grew up with this other lady and I called her mom for years. So it was funny calling someone else mom. But
you felt it? You saw it?
You know, I knew that, wait a minute, you know, this is, you know, and I did, you know, I had known that my dad threatened her life if she tried to see me. So,
wow.
That, you know, because everybody told me, no, she left you, you know. And so.
Well, that's the whole, like, you know, that's the story. Like, it's just that, you know, these kind of like, these extreme forms of masculinity.
Yeah.
You know, that, you know, you're pretty sort of.
It's a real toxic masculinity. That's the biggest problem that I think one of the Latino communities has, is the men have this toxic masculinity thing that does, you know, like, you know what? I embarrass my kids. I don't care if they're with their friends or not. I hug them and I kiss them and I tell them I love them.
Yeah. But that's new. Right? That's new for you.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, it's funny because there'll be a bunch of his friends. I'll grab my son. I'll kiss him and I'll go, I love you, son. And all his friends will go, oh, and then I'll give him a look. And they'll tell me, right?
You just recently learned about the term toxic masculinity.
Yeah, absolutely. Don Logue gave me that term.
Yeah, I mean, it's been in the culture, but like it's sort of a like these, like when you,
You know, gang banging is all about toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
You know, then the kids don't even know it.
Yeah.
They don't even know it. They're fighting battles that started in 1941 and don't even know why. Why are you guys fighting them guys from across the street?
Do you know?
I don't even know. You know, but I'm literally, it's yeah. toxic masculinity. This is what we're supposed to do. We're warriors. We're Chicanos. No. Chicanos take care of their family. Chicanos pay taxes. Chicanos have good jobs. Chicanos do things. You yeah. know what I mean? Make history. That's what Chicanos do.
You well,
know?
When you, what was the first, because there's a moment where you talk about how you learned to act. With your Uncle Gilbert.
Yeah. I'm standing in front of a mirror with you ever seen an Army 44? They're this big,
yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
And they're too damn heavy to be a gun.
Yeah.
And so he had me in front of a mirror, like holding it.
When you were 12?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. You're give me the money. Give me the money.
Yeah.
And I think I was 9.
Yeah.
And your voice is, hey, it's so high.
Yeah.
You sound like a little bitch.
Yeah.
You know, I got 4 guys yelling at you. I sound, and finally, it's like they gave me a sawed-off shotgun. And that made it very simple.
Right.
But you don't even say nothing.
Just look at it.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, but it's funny. I hate to say this because, you know, you're holding a pistol, you feel, you know, strong. When you hold a sawed-off shotgun, there's a completely different feeling that runs through you.
Yeah.
It's like, this is a bazooka.
Yeah.
You know, there's a completely different feeling.
Good
like,
feeling?
I won't kill you. I'll kill all of you, you know.
Yeah.
It's a good feeling at the time.
Right.
You know, so one of the things that directors have told me, they say, how do you go from that character of a maniac to immediately playing with your kids or telling your kids you love them? And I say, you know what? Because I don't like that character.
Right.
That character's real to me. Other people are acting it.
Right.
You know?
You've been that guy.
Yeah, I've played that character and then went and thrown up.
Yeah.
You know, because that's an evil, ugly person.
But it's part of you.
It's, yeah, it's there.
Yeah.
You know what? It's so funny. It hasn't. I can count the times that guy's come out.
Yeah.
I remember us.
Since you got sober, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah. We were, my kid, Danny Boy, was running up and down the hallway in the apartments that we lived in Venice. And one of the guys, one of the tenants grabbed him, right?
Yeah.
Hey, stop running. And
yeah.
shook him, right?
Right.
And he came running in the house and I could see his arm was red. And he said, that man's grabbing, you know, he's crying. And I can remember actually kicking in that man's door and going in and grabbing him.
Yeah.
And him saying, you know, my God, you're a monster.
Yeah.
You're a monster. Because when that demon comes out, it's like your whole structure of your face changes. It's not like, oh, you look angry.
Right. Yeah, it's blind rage.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're just like, yeah.
You know what? It's funny. And I've seen that. I can remember when my dad grabbed me and was frothing at the mouth and just like his whole demeanor changed.
Just snapped.
Yeah.
Man. Yeah. And also, the drug started with your uncle as well, right?
Oh, yeah. So my uncle, the first.
Holding the guns and the dope.
The first drug deal that I've ever gone on is really funny. Cause I was in what was it? A 1942 Chevy.
Yeah.
1942 Chevy.
Yeah.
And the radio didn't work. It was a 42 Chevy or a 36. I don't remember. But the clock didn't work. And
yeah.
My uncle had a bowl of weed.
Yeah.
You know, and he says, okay, count the songs. So we stole my grandpa's car. I didn't know we stole the car.
Yeah.
My grandfather was asleep. We took the car.
Okay? Yeah.
And we're driving. Okay, there's one song. There's two songs.
Yeah.
There's three songs. That's like 9 minutes.
Yeah.
Gilbert would pull in front of a house and the guy'd come out, give me three. So he'd roll 3 joints, give him 3 joints. The guy would pay and then we'd take off.
You right.
know, go to someone else's. And he was kind of like a Grubhub or something.
Yeah.
Right. Hub.
Yeah. Yeah.
But he was delivering.
Yeah.
And how many songs? We got 12 songs, you know, so we knew exactly how many, and then we'd take the car back.
Oh, you know? So you wouldn't be out too long?
So my grandfather wouldn't know we took the car.
Right, yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
You know, and that was like my first.
How old were you?
Eight?
Yeah,
with Gilbert, yeah.
So this guy, because your dad was this raging, not, you know, didn't want, did he like you?
Yeah, you know what? You know what? I think because of what happened with my mom.
Yeah.
In the back, it's like if somebody tells you, hey, I saw your wife at a club last night. Now, my wife, man, I was at home.
Oh, you mean, okay, so.
You know, and then, hey, did you? No, I wasn't there.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's at the back of your mind.
Right.
And I think for the rest of our lives, that was at the back of my dad's mind.
Before he found out about your uncle.
No, yeah, right, you see.
He knew something was up.
Yeah.
And
I told him.
How old were you?
I was 7.
You were 7 years old, and your father's sister's husband came over.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't know what was going on.
No, I thought they were going to give me a present because they closed the curtains.
They closed the curtains and made you go outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I, about 3 weeks later, month later, my mom got back from Mexico. She'd gone on a trip to Mexico and came back. And I had told him.
Yeah.
And then in the middle of the night, I woke up with my dad grabbing me by the throat and lifting me up.
Yeah.
Saying, Why did you lie?
Yeah.
And my mom screaming, tell him the truth. You lied.
Yeah.
Shit. I said, I lied. I'm sorry.
Because you, like in that moment, because when you talk about it, like you knew someone was going to get hurt. Now, it was either going to be you or her.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was kind of like I knew I was going to die, you know, or.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain. I don't explain that rage.
Yeah,
I don't know how
that he had.
Yeah, because
you weren't looking at your dad.
No,
right.
No, I was looking at an animal.
Yeah,
and you know,
and
barely. I'm sorry. I lied.
Yeah, yeah.
See, why, I'm sorry. So
you save yourself.
I lied. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he threw me back down the bed. They were, and I could hear him fucking.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I think after that.
It was always in there.
I think he always, that's why he would never, me and my dad were never close, never got close.
Yeah.
You know, we always had that. And then when he found out.
For real.
Yeah, it broke him. It just fucking broke him.
But that was years later.
Years later.
So you think that.
I'd already been to the pen. I came out, came back.
Oh, yeah. But you think at the moment that you brought up that it stuck in him, he knew you were telling the truth. Why'd you have to lie?
Well, I don't know if he knew. I don't think he wanted to believe.
Right, of course. Right, yeah.
You
yeah.
know?
Yeah.
And because my dad was, I'm like my dad.
Yeah.
I don't know how much money I make.
Yeah.
You know, all the wives I've had became very rich.
Yeah.
Because I just signed my tier ticket.
Yeah.
They pay every.
Yeah. Yeah.
So without a wife, it's like nothing gets paid. In fact, well, my last wife, I never paid taxes. She did. I never paid rent. She did. I just made money.
Yeah.
So when we divorced, she ended up with 8 houses.
Yeah. You got nothing.
And I ended up with my bank account, and that was it, you know. And
well, that was the sad part of the story was that. You know, that you were always hustling.
Yeah, yeah,
but whole life. But when did you first go to jail? What was it for?
God, throwing a rock at Darlene Sanchez. I didn't throw a rock.
Yeah.
We were playing hit the bat.
Yeah.
And with hit the bat, you hit the ball, and then whoever, if you catch it, that means you're up. But you pick it up, and you roll it towards the bat.
Yeah.
It hits the bat and jumps up.
Right.
And then they have to catch it.
Yeah.
So I learned how to throw it. And hit the bat, and it would bounce back.
Right.
But the bat jumped up.
Yeah.
Pow, hit her in the eye, cut her eye. So,
yeah.
So Darlene's mom and dad were mute. They couldn't speak. Huh. They spoke in sign.
Yeah.
And the kids all ran, and Danny hit Darlene with a bat. Danny hit Darlene with a bat. So they called the police. And the minute I heard police, I ran. That's Gilbert always said. They came, and when they got me, they put me in the car, and they were teasing me. You know, you'll get the chair, kid, blah, blah. And she, you know, hope she don't die. And, you know, I ran home.
Yeah.
And nothing was ever done. They realized what had happened. And,
right.
But that was my first introduction with the police, really. And once that fear of going to jail is gone, nothing to stop you.
But you think that, because, you know, you talk about how it was just your legacy, that was your family, that, you know, everybody ended up in jail, everyone was criminals, everyone ended up on dope.
You know what,
I'm
telling you, when I got to juvenile hall, there were so many Mexicans in juvenile hall, I thought Mexicans were supposed to go there. I mean, it was literally, it was like crazy. Hey, what's up, guys that I hadn't seen for weeks, and they, that's where they were.
Yeah.
You know, and so there was this big camaraderie, you know, and you make friends.
But why'd you go in for the first time?
Assault with a deadly weapon.
Oh, yeah, what'd you do?
I was in James's restaurant and stabbed a couple of sailors with a broken bottle. They attacked me, so.
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah.
And then burglary, just stuff. What we did, and were you
using then too?
Yeah, I've always used. My uncle turned me on to grass. When I was 8.
Yeah,
and then gave me a fix of heroin. It was funny because I remember my sponsor said, "Danny, everybody talks about abuse. I was never abused."
Yeah.
You know, my sponsor said, "You don't think giving marijuana to an 8-year-old is abuse?" I thought it was sharing.
Or tying off a kid who's 12.
And my dad, that anger, it was just, that's the way it was. It wasn't abuse. It was like, you fucked up, so you get fucked up.
Do you frame it as abuse now?
Now, definitely.
Yeah.
I didn't know. Definitely, man. You can't grab a kid's throat.
Yeah.
You know? I remember when my son, Gilbert, killed me. When he, one time I caught him using in my house when he was on the run.
Right? Yeah.
And I grabbed him. And I turned into my father. And
you felt it.
It was like, I couldn't breathe. And I ran outside. And I sat on the curb and I was sobbing. I was like, fuck, get away from me. I was screaming, get away from me. You know, I wanted my dad to get away from me.
Yeah.
I went back and I apologized. Gilbert, I'm so sorry, man. I will never.
Yeah.
I would never do that. I'll never. I swear to God. But you can't use in this house. They'll put me in prison forever.
Yeah.
He understood that. Daddy understood.
So when it was an interesting story of the book when you saw your uncle, you know, tie off. It was those old kind of like antique glass syringes.
Yeah. My grandfather was a diabetic. So I got in trouble for using that with a squirt gun one time. Yeah.
The big glass one.
Yeah.
With that one needle.
And that was not a 26.
It's huge, right?
Yeah. And so, again, I had so much trust in this guy.
And Gilbert, your uncle.
Yeah, I just said, give me some.
Mm-hmm.
And prior to that, when my grandfather was screaming at us and Gilbert was using, I didn't know he was shooting dope, but my grandfather was the same way. He became—
Is your dad's dad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He became a monster. And I was his favorite because our birthdays were both May 16th.
Yeah.
You know, but he was screaming at us, you got Roger. And this froth. And I can remember feeling like I was going to shit my pants. I knew he was going to hit me.
Yeah.
And I was squeezing like this.
Waiting for it.
And I look over and I see my Uncle Gilbert. He's doing this.
Nodding out.
He's nodding. And I'm like, oh my God. And I'm waiting. He got so angry because Gilbert now is like,
yeah, full nod.
He got so fucking, he let out this primal scream and went into his room and slammed the door. And I'm staring at Gilbert. And Gilbert, did he hit us? You know, I want to be like that. I want to be like that for the rest of my life.
Did he?
He
hit
is
us?
The coolest. We stared death in the face, and he went to sleep.
Yeah. That's what heroin is.
God. And so when I found him, when I seen him, and he told me, I threatened to snitch on him.
Yeah.
Because I seen that syringe.
Yeah.
And I got in trouble for it.
Yeah.
I said, give me some, Gilbert. Yeah. And he goes, no, you can't have none, Danny Boy. You can't. He said, I remember saying, I can't do this to you.
Yeah.
I said, give me some or I'll tell.
Oh, wow.
And I locked the door and he said, okay, hold this. And I was holding his tie.
Yeah.
and I'm like amazed. Yeah. I hate shots. Who doesn't?
You know? Yeah.
And I watch him, and I see the explosion of the blood. Boom. I seen where he got all his stuff. He went from being frigid and to like, you want to get loaded. You, to this unbelievable character who could stare death in the face and go
at
to
peace
sleep.
Or something. Yeah.
And I said, give me it. Bang. And I didn't do well my first fix. I ended up out in the front yard soaking wet because he had to put me in under the shower.
Are you OD'd?
I did, yeah, yeah. I don't think, I think I just went out.
Yeah.
I just, and I just, like, but I loved
You're 12, you loved it. Yeah.
I just that felt
And that began that relationship. And then you also, you know, were, you know, robbing and stealing.
Yeah.
And that was the whole other buzz.
The whole thing was drinking, too, you know, because you can't run around at 12. Me and Frankie, a guy named Frankie Mungaro, who's now passed away, were probably the youngest dope fiends running around the valley. Yeah, he was like a year older than me.
Yeah.
God, he was so good. He could, he was so good, he burned everybody, right?
Yeah.
I caught him one time because he had burned us. And he said, no, come on, Danny. I got a score right now.
Yeah.
I'll give you half. I'll give you half. He says, here, just stay here with me. Here's my car. Here's the keys. I swear to God. So he splits. I'm sitting on this guy's fender, right? All of a sudden, this big hillbilly comes out. The hell are you doing on my car, boy? What do you mean it's Frank? Jazz off my car. And I got it. And I look at the keys.
Yeah.
They're house keys. And son of a bitch.
Gotcha.
And later on,
yeah.
Later on, 10 years later, I'm in the pen.
Yeah.
And who comes in is Frankie. And I go, you, I'm going to kill you. And he goes, no, no, wait, I got a score. I go,
he remembered.
Yeah, God. Man.
That's hilarious.
But so, you know what? Besides the alcohol, pills, the drink, you know, because it was tough to get heroin when you're 13, 14. So we were just on a mad binge to get.
Yeah. But I like the way you talk about how the rush of robbing, the rush of doing the crime was, you didn't know whether that was more exciting than the drugs or the drugs were more exciting.
You know what? You don't know whether you're doing robberies to support your drug habit or drugs to support your robbery habit.
Yeah.
Because robbery, burglaries, extortion, it all goes together. Most of your crime in Los Angeles is drug related.
But what was great about this book, because I read the last book I read that talked this much about politics on the inside, the way jail works, was that Art Pepper's book, Straight Time.
Yeah.
But he really goes into it, not unlike you did, what it takes to survive. In jail.
Well, the biggest, the thing in jail, and it's like, a lot of the racism in the United States comes from jail.
Yeah.
Okay, that's where it is.
Yeah.
That's where people separate themselves. People have to separate themselves.
Yeah.
Do you understand? It's not a want.
Into tribes?
Oh, absolutely. Let me tell you something. In Los Angeles, we have friends all different ethnic groups, different gangs, and then you have gangs that are communities. When you go to jail, all of a sudden, your gang's Mexican, this gang, you're together. You're all together, all right, for protection, for help, for whatever. Now,
you mean you go with your people?
Absolutely. You have to.
Right.
Do you understand? You have to, or you'll be a mark. And it's like, now we got the North and the South. It's stupid. You know,
those are Mexican gangs.
Yeah, the Mexican mafia, the Crips, Bloods, and Norteños, so it's like, it's just crazy. But,
how'd you learn that stuff? Just by going in? Like, because you started in juvie, right? Yeah. And then you did your first real stint where?
In youth authority.
Yeah.
Well, camp, actually, juvenile camp. But now, you got to understand, I had a mentor.
Yeah.
My Uncle Gilbert taught me everything about
how to survive in prison.
Yeah. Somebody asked you, where are you from? Just hit them. Just hit them, because if they really cared where you were from, they wouldn't ask you.
Yeah.
You understand? Where you're from, you better say the right word or you get jumped. So you might as well get down first.
Right.
So, no,
It was all about not showing any vulnerability at any turn.
At all.
And there was all these places it could happen.
You got to remember, there's two kinds of predator, and there's prey.
Yeah.
Now, all the celebrities, I love the celebrities. Yeah, well, I just did my own time. You're a damn liar, because you paid somebody. Yeah. All of them. Yeah. All of them.
Oh, you mean when they were in the inside?
Absolutely.
They just used their money to...
And they'll use it. No, I had a posse. Yeah. Yeah, well, you took care of that posse, right, or you wouldn't have a posse.
Right.
You know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Or they would have been... They would have been...
Yeah, they'd have been a girl.
Turned out a girl.
Yeah. It's like, I tell people, I see people, like really tough guys in Hollywood, right? It's so weird.
Yeah.
Every... wannabe tough guy in Hollywood has asked me, hey, what would happen to me if I went to jail? You want to tell him you'd be a girl.
Yeah.
Oh, no, you'd be all right because you got smart. You know? But you have to understand, you have to grow up in that environment to survive. And I know some of the toughest guys in the world I've never seen a fair fight in jail.
Yeah.
And everybody thinks, well, I can fight.
Right.
They're 6 inches of steel.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it. Bang, bang, bang. And it's easier to get away with a stabbing than it is a fist fight.
Right.
Because if I sock you, you're going to sock me back.
And you can see, yeah.
And then you can, and shoot at you. If I come up behind you and stab you 3 times and walk away, I'm gone before you drop.
Right. And that's what happens.
That's all the time.
So when you went in there, you had friends in there, and you just sort of, you got to know how it worked, but you were also boxing.
Yeah. My uncle, Gilbert, he was Golden Gloves, and I was his punching bag.
Yeah.
He used to say I was his sparring partner, but basically I had to learn how to fight or get my head beat in.
You know? Right.
So he taught me really well, and everybody knew I could box.
Yeah.
So the minute I would show up in an institution, hey, all right, we got a chance, and then they'd set me up a fight with...
with whoever?
Yeah.
With their guy?
Yeah.
And then you kick his ass? And...
I did pretty good. Yeah. I did pretty good fighting.
So when it just, like, the turn happened, like, it seemed that you were sort of resigned to the fact that you were destined to spend your life in jail, and that somehow or another you were going to survive it, and that you talk about the sort of immediacy, the now of San Quentin.
Right now.
Right. Everything. It's interesting because that now, which is like heightened by pure fucking violence, you know, it's like that's what Buddhists are trying to find too. There's not, but the other kind of now, the you want to be present.
Yeah, right.
But
right.
Being present in a spiritual way is different than being present on the yard.
Right. Yes, yes. You know, I mean, the term, I got your back, that came from prison.
Yeah.
Because when you're talking to somebody, you're watching their back because they're facing you.
Yeah.
I got your back.
Yeah. And they can see who's coming at you.
Baggy clothes. You know, everybody wants to wear baggy. Baggy clothes came from prison. Because if somebody didn't like you, they 30s, here. Yeah. And they're 42s.
And that's where that came from.
So you learn how to fold them over and make them fit.
But there's also something that I'm starting to realize in show business and just in life in general, that, you know, loyalty in prison means something.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't mean something out here.
No, it doesn't mean nothing. It does to me, but it doesn't.
In general,
yeah.
It's sort of a fascinating thing to me, again, about the small town nature of it, is that you being a celebrity, but even before you were a celebrity, the guys who were in prison, those guys that, you know, the guys who called the shots.
Yeah, shot callers. Yeah.
The shot callers. I mean, they keep a check on everybody who runs through there and who they've given a pass to live. It seems like if you're of a certain neighborhood or if you're a certain ilk or you spend time on the inside, you're being allowed to live.
Exactly.
By a group of guys.
Exactly. Well, you know what? It's like this. There's two groups of people. There's predators and there's prey.
Yeah.
Now, if you've proved that you're a predator from juvenile hall to camp to youth authority to state prison, then you were accepted as a predator. You're not.
And you're allowed to live.
The only problem with that is that I might wake up and I'm a predator, but the guy down the tier says, well, I think you're prey.
Right.
So now you have to do whatever it takes to make sure he knows you're top predator.
And so you're putting him in that position. That means kill him.
Yeah.
And that's the position that you're in prison that you don't want, that you didn't ask for.
You don't ask for it. Well, some people ask for it.
Because you talk about your nephew Gilbert, your uncle Gilbert's son was put in that position.
Yeah.
And you've got no choice if you want to continue living.
Yeah, right.
But it's also like, that's prison, man, right? That's what happens.
Right now, I'm so proud. And my Uncle Gilbert, I know in heaven, he's like so fucking, because his son, Gilbert, I got out of prison.
Yeah.
Me and Mario Castillo went to Governor Brown, went to senators, went to everybody.
Yeah.
And he went to prison when he was 17. He got out when he was 55. He's in the electrical union right now.
Yeah.
He worked on the Rams stadium. Go Rams, go Rams.
Yeah.
And now he's working at the airport.
Yeah.
He's working. It's funny because when you work at the airport, you have to have three people to vouch for you.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So when he got the three people, the feds grabbed him immediately. What do you mean? You got three ex-convicts here. You got Danny Trejo, Mario Castillo, and Sal Sadelli. You got ex-felons, but the powers that be all knew us and knew what we did. So he was. So right now,
so he's all right
at the airport.
Yeah. He's doing good?
Doing great, man.
That's great. And also, there's like weird little tidbits in the
book. Been out of the pen 3 years.
Yeah.
And just bought a brand new Lexus.
Oh, that's good.
Gorgeous.
That's good.
No, but he bought that one that does 170. In 3 seconds or some shit.
All you guys, you just speed. You're just junkie. Adrenaline junkie.
Not me.
Not
I'm
you.
Going slow.
Are you going slow? Yeah. Well, that's good, man. I'm glad that there are some happy endings or some happy turns of events. God. I mean, there's some great side stories in this about you and that guy Dennis. That way that people come back into your life and that, you know, once you made the turn that you had to. That was the interesting thing, too, in the book is that, you know, when you hit the wall, because you're using on the inside, right, all you can.
Yeah. Everything.
I mean, like, and all that hustle of, like, you know, how you position yourself to get the shit and how you, you know, you run the racket for the big guys to collect on debts and all that. The survival thing in prison is fascinating to me because I hope I never have to learn that firsthand.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm through.
Pay your taxes. That's the only reason you go to prison. Pay your taxes. I'm trying to pay mine right now.
But what was it that finally, you know, because you had situated yourself as, you know, somebody who was helping. The wardens brought you into, you know, they let you stay on a certain block so you could be sort of a mentor or keep some of these kids in control. Yeah. So you know, once you started to do esteemable acts, right?
Yeah.
Like that, what was it that made you get sober?
Well, I was actually in the hole in Soledad.
Yeah.
In 1968, Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
Now, Cinco de Mayo, to most Mexicans, means 5th of May. You know, and it's actually the Battle of Puebla, some battle that they fought, and they beat the French, I think. But up here, Cinco de Mayo, if you're a real Mexican, it means you better have bail money ready.
Yeah.
Okay, because you're probably going to jail. All right? Drink all the tequila you can. Drink all the beer. You're gonna beat up your wife, or she's gonna stab you, or you're gonna shoot a gun, or fight your neighbor. Something's gonna go wrong. Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah.
We had an outside baseball team come in.
Yeah.
Cinco de Mayo. They could have picked any other Hollywood, any other holiday, but you've got, you know, 2,000 drunk Mexicans, you know, and Cinco de Mayo, and Ray Pacheco socked a free person. Henry kicked the coach. It was alleged I threw a rock and hit Lieutenant Gibbons.
This was like at this baseball game. Yeah. You guys were all in the stands drunk on homemade,
hooch,
on Pruno.
Loaded pills. Yeah.
And your friend, what was his name, Ray?
Ray, yeah.
He was you couldn't stop it. No. You talked about that vibration that happens before shit was going to go down.
Me and Ray had been friends since we were 13 years old.
Yeah.
He was from White Fence, a gang in L.A., and I used to come visit my grandma, my mom's mom, my stepmom's mom in L.A., and we played ball in the street.
You knew that guy.
And so when we got to the joint, it was funny, but before it started, we knew it was like it was a beautiful day, a cloudy day without clouds.
Yeah.
If you can understand that.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
And everything's bam. And in the pen.
And these are white kids, right? The kids on the team.
Yeah, these are all.
It was a good, like some sort of charity event?
It was kind of just a sports game. They came in to play the convicts, okay? Yeah, yeah. But it was kind of a. The third baseman was like kind of the big white dude.
Yeah.
chewing gum. And
yeah.
You're not allowed gum in the prison, yeah. You know. So anybody with respect wouldn't chew gum.
Right.
It's that simple. We're not allowed, you know. So yeah. And they tell him they're not allowed gum, but he chose to chew gum. And Race started, I wish I had gum. I wish I had gum. And I kept edging Ray. No, the guy will kick your ass.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Yeah.
So I went to the bathroom. And when I went to the bathroom, Ray ended up attacking this guy. And I came out and just all hell. Just,
yeah.
You know, I mean, yeah. It's an explosion.
Like a prison riot almost.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody.
Yeah.
And, so we, but it's funny because like when that thing happened with Trump and they were saying, insurrection.
Yeah.
I was trying to say, what's an insurrection?
Yeah. You know,
they said, what's like a riot? I said, shit, I got a riot.
Yeah, yeah.
And I almost went to the gas chamber. You know what I mean?
Right. So that's what started over gum.
Yeah.
Just wanted gum.
Just wanted gum.
This fucker.
And so.
Fucker chewing gum.
I think right there.
You were
in the hole. In the hole.
They put you in the hole and you didn't know what how you were going to be sentenced. And you were afraid that was it.
Well, you know, you lose the ability to be afraid. You have to have an anger,
right?
You know, and fear is anger,
right?
You know, so you're kind of angry at everything. And I remember somebody had, and shit, somebody wrote "God sucks"
in the hole.
Now,
yeah.
Now, I've been in the hole. There's nothing. You know, it's okay, cool. Time to relax. But I got to kick these pills and this heroin shit. So
every time you were in the hole, you had to sweat it out.
Yeah, and
you said you played movies in your head.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, this was I did that before.
Yeah.
This time I kind of like just remember saying, God, if you're there,
yeah,
me and Ray and Henry will be all right. If you're not, we're screwed. I remember that. And then people always talked about potential.
Yeah.
So in grammar school, he has a lot of potential, but he can't sit still.
Yeah.
Oh, he has a lot of potential, but he won't shut up.
Right.
You know, has a lot of potential, but he can't stop moving.
Yeah.
And a lot of potential, but he interrupts. My probation officer said, God, Danny's got a lot of potential if he could just stop committing burglaries.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
He's got a lot of potential. And I remember asking myself, what happened to all that potential?
Yeah.
You know, what happened to all that potential?
Yeah.
I mean, prison, I was somewhat of a leader, but was that it? You know, and I remember asking God that if we have to die, let me die with dignity.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go screaming and yelling and
to the chair to whatever?
The gas chamber.
Yeah.
This is all gas chamber
offense. Yeah.
I said, just let me die with dignity. And I'll say your name every day, and I'll do whatever I can for my fellow inmate. And I remember saying inmate because I never thought I was getting out of prison.
Yeah.
And by the grace of God, it was a DA reject.
Yeah.
The district attorney rejected it. After, what the hell?
No man? Case here.
No case. You know, nobody's saying he did it.
Right.
You know what
there
I mean?
There was no proof that anyone threw the rock or whatever.
Mickey Mouse did it. Your mother did it.
Oh, they were looking for witnesses and the inmates? Yeah, no one's going to rat.
No, you can't. Yeah, so. And that was a time when you didn't rat. You know, this was 1968.
Yeah.
When there was still a little bit of honor.
Yeah.
And now it's like everybody wants to wait. Like, I'll tell you. They stand in line to tell.
Yeah, they'll do it on Twitter.
But you know, I came back out. All of a sudden, I gave up the little heroin thing I had. And I said, I'll take the money, but you know, I'm not going to deal. And
You weren't moving the dope anymore.
No, I was just collecting a little of the money. And I was collecting money from the people I was protecting and stuff. But
no more drugs.
But I stopped drinking and I stopped using. And when I went to board 11 months later, August, I went to board in July.
Yeah.
And they said, we're giving you a 30-day rehab.
Yeah.
Rehab. That means you're out in 30 days.
Yeah.
I remember Mad Dog Madden. That was his name, the parole agent, the parole board member. He said, I'm going to give you a chance to try your wings, Danny.
Yeah.
You got a 10 top. You've done 5. Bring us back a life sentence. You know, like, in other words, we know you're not going to make it. And
so he let you out knowing that you'd probably be back.
Yeah. But then I'd be back, and then I'd have a life sentence.
He was defying
you. Yeah, and I wouldn't.
to do
something.
They wouldn't
have to bother with me
right,
anymore.
Right, right.
So I came out and I was like, well, what am I going to do? How do you go from burglarizing every house in your mom's neighborhood to being a nice guy?
And but you knew what AA was.
Oh, yeah. No, I knew what AA was from 1959.
Yeah.
I stumbled into a meeting. We thought it was a party.
Yeah.
You know, all these cars parked. I walked in carrying a case of beer, three bottles of wine, half pint of whiskey. I was already loaded on pills, and I had a .38 snub nose. And me and all my crew, we all busted in thinking it was a party. And they asked me to stay.
Yeah.
You know.
They knew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I never did. I've come back 1969. When I come out of the pen, I went back to that meeting.
You did?
And actually told him I've been here before. And a lady named Doris Coates remembered me.
Really?
Doris and her husband. Yeah. We remember you. Hi, sunshine. And I think, wow, I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that whole thing about like how you, and you met Manson in prison briefly?
Yeah, yeah. He was, Manson wasn't nothing. I mean, I know the, no, I hate to just.
I know, that's, I liked how you characterized him. Like he was like a crazy person.
Skinny, crazy person. Yeah. And, you know, it's like what he did, he couldn't have done in East Los Angeles.
Right.
You know, he couldn't have done in Compton or Watts.
We did it with a bunch of runaway girls.
Yeah, right. Runaway little
girls. He was a pimp.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And he's good. He had good criminal lingo.
Yeah.
I mean, he could, you know, do play the dozens, do all that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's impressive, you know, but basically they were going to, you know.
It's con man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good con man.
Yeah, I had talked to Quentin the other day. Tarantino.
I love Quentin.
And so, did you watch Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
Oh yeah.
He killed those Manson kids.
Yeah. It's so funny because you know what? Listen. What's funny? When I met Quentin, I was doing Desperado.
Yeah.
And I didn't know who he was.
Right.
I just knew I was doing Desperado with Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, this guy comes up and goes, "Hey, you're perfect. We're going to do this movie." Blah 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 blah.
Yeah.
And I'm like. It's like, you know, I know I'm talking. This guy's like, what is this? And then when he went away, who's this? That's Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay.
Was he talking about Machete?
God, yeah.
They were thinking about that a long time.
They were thinking that when we did Desperado.
Oh, Desperado,
the first
one
I did with Robert Rodriguez.
I thought it was great. Like, I started to realize that this idea, because being a sober guy myself and being a selfish asshole myself and having a rage problem myself, rage is rage.
Yeah.
But the idea of service, like, you know, once you said to God that I'm going to be this guy that's going to help, is that, you know, you have to learn how to do it.
I had to do it.
Right. But, like, it wasn't necessarily that you wanted to do it.
No. The first thing I can remember doing, I was standing out in front of my mom's yard on a Saturday.
Yeah.
No, Sunday. It was Sunday. Because I'd gone to meetings a Saturday night, stayed out till 4 o'clock in the morning with Frank and two girls, and then came home, and I was standing in front of my mom's, and I had a double shot glass, but it had soda in it, Coke in it with ice, because I didn't want anybody to know I wasn't drinking.
Right.
You know,
so the macho thing.
Guys would go by, and then I seen this lady pulling out her trash, because trash day was Monday, They didn't have the big rolling green cans and stuff. They just had a big pan, Dina, that you would throw everything in, garbage, everything, and you'd drag it out.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing her, and I went over to help. I remember what she said. She said, "No me robas, don't rob me, Danny."
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, "Shut up, vieja." And I grabbed her, her can, and I pulled it out. Then I went to the backyard and grabbed the other one. That lady never took her eyes off me. She knew I was going to break for the garage and steal her lawnmower or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I brought the can and I left. And I walked out. And she just stood there staring at me. And that's what I did. Every Sunday, I would take out all the old people's trash. I just go take it out.
And it was this decision you made. But, like, I know, like, well, I don't know what struck me about it was that when you knew, or that any of us know who are in the program, when our ego is getting too big, or we're acting dry, or we're acting out, or we're doing things that, you know, we're going to have to make an amends for, that the only way to balance that is service.
Yeah, let me tell you something. When in my garage, I have a 6-car garage.
Yeah.
Not because I'm wealthy out of here, just like, that's the way I bought the house. Had this beautiful, and I got old cars, so I bought this garage.
Yeah.
And we waxed the garage floor,
yeah,
shiny as
yeah
my jail cell used to yeah be. And every time I start thinking I'm all that, you understand?
Yeah.
You know when you're like,
yeah,
you
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah,
when you yell at somebody, you're, wait a minute. I get a roll of toilet paper. I go out to the garage.
Yeah.
I lay on that shiny floor.
Yeah.
And I put that toilet paper for my pillow.
Yeah.
Because in the county jail, there's never any place to sit down or lay down.
Yeah.
So you get the toilet paper and you lay on that floor.
Yeah.
And I just lay there.
Yeah.
And it just, it all comes back to focus. It's, yeah, you know, you know what this is.
Yeah.
You get comfortable, you asshole.
Wow. That's how you do it?
Honest to God, it's kind of like my little remembrance or
right
my little slap in the face. It's like, this is where you came from.
Yeah, and also the, you know, that like I didn't know the through line of the story, but I mean you when you got out of prison, you dedicated your life to service on all levels.
Yeah,
helping open rehabs, getting guys on methadone, off methadone, off heroin. And it was your life.
Yeah, it's still doing
it. Yeah.
I still work for Western Pacific Rehab. They're right here in Glendale.
Yeah.
Western Pacific Med Corp. Mark Hickman, that's my CEO.
Yeah.
And he knows what I do.
Yeah.
And we go up to meet with Governor Newsom. We go up to meet. And it's like, because of the celebrity, I can get in.
Yeah.
You know, so
I still. But it's still about service.
That's all it is.
Because that's what they say in the racket, you know. They say you got to put your sobriety first.
Absolutely.
And that was always the thing.
And you know what? What I love about the program is that it's not just service to the program. It's not just making coffee. No, that's fine.
Yeah.
Make the coffee. But it's also being of service to the world.
Yeah.
You know, and I love doing that.
And it's just, and I like in the book how you try to reconcile, or at least they're moving towards, a deeper understanding of women, that, you know, you take real responsibility in the book. Yeah. You know, you don't look like a good guy.
No, I wasn't.
Even in the book, you know, you talk about all this great shit, but you're like, I was doing all this great shit, but I was a fucking animal.
I can remember waking up going, oh shit, I got to get home. And my wife saying, you are home. Uh-oh. Oh, honey, I had the worst dream. You're not going to believe this. Oh, God.
Oh, man.
You know what? Let me just.
That's a good one.
Four wives could have stabbed me, and they would have been right. I mean, it's just that I can't. I have to take responsibility for all that. I had some great women, and it was like I'm not going to say my background. It was me. You know, I was a pig,
But do you ever think of it as in terms of like, you know, outside of whatever the macho thing is, or because like, you really say in the book that like you didn't give a shit about their feelings.
No.
You were going to do what you were going to do, and either they were going to take it or they weren't.
You know, before I got clean and sober,
yeah.
If you were on fire, I wouldn't piss on you. Didn't care. It didn't matter. I think going through juvenile hall and going through, you become somewhat of a sociopath. You have to.
To survive.
To survive.
Right.
But that sticks with you.
Yeah.
You know, and one thing my uncle taught me was never be a bully. Don't fight down. And yet, I was a bully to the women I was with, but not to the men.
Because culturally, you didn't look at them the same way.
No.
And you talk about how
I looked at them the way my dad looked at my stepmom, as a indentured servant.
Right, right. Just there to, you know, to.
And it's funny. It's funny when I got with Maeve, I had Danny Boy. I had my oldest son.
With Diane.
Yeah. And I got with her almost to take care of my son.
Just like your dad did.
I fell in love with her. I mean, she gave me two other beautiful kids, but yet still, you know, I remember when I came back from doing Blood In, Blood Out.
Yeah.
And we're in the swimming pool. And I can remember, God, why can't I do this? Why can't I do this? Why am I waiting to escape?
Be a good husband, a good father.
Why am I waiting to escape? Why am I waiting till nightfall when I have to do something and be on the street? I knew, you know, and it was like because
why?
Because she had gotten so close and
to you.
And it's like I knew that you almost know this lady can really hurt me.
It's a threat, yeah. Yeah,
you know, and it wasn't even hurt. It was like, this lady could really break me.
Right.
Like, you know, you understand?
I get it. Dad, I get it.
My dad was this figure of a man. It's a, yeah. It was unreal.
But do you ever, but look at you now, like, you know, you've sort of moved through that. Like, what do we, because I have same issues with this intimacy thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but what does that even mean, break you? What the hell do you think is going to happen?
Let me say this. When I seen my dad still, and then after he found out, and after him and my mom split up,
yeah.
I went over there. Hey, you okay, Dad? Yeah, I'm all right.
Broke.
I seen him as an old man.
I
said, Dad, come on. You want me to bring over a couple of brides?
Yeah, right.
You want a couple of brides? No, it's all right. It's all right. And he, I didn't know what to do. And then when they got back together, he was still trying to be the man, but he was broken. He was just...
And that's what you were afraid of.
Yeah, that's what I've been afraid of all my life.
But you're not that guy.
No, not now.
I don't think you ever were, maybe.
But I'm also by myself right now. I live with two other guys, my two assistants, and my life right now is awesome. I think Maeve, the mother of my children, me and her get along great.
Yeah.
You know, I helped her pay for her house.
Yeah.
I got my house and we're like cool. I gave my daughter my mom's house and my daughter's moving back from Ohio. That's Gilbert's
sister,
sister, and so she'll be back, so all my whole family will be together, and that's just awesome. You know?
Yeah, I the way you reckoned with it, you know, I remember what I was going to ask you. Did you ever think, like, obviously when you get sober, and you, like, because, like, the one thing I noticed in the book, neither did I. Right when I got sober, I grabbed onto a woman.
Absolutely.
I married her.
Yeah, me too.
Drained her of her life force, and she left me.
Yeah, absolutely. I had the most
That's not in the book.
I had this most beautifulest woman, just gorgeous and absolutely beautiful.
And you were in your 20s.
Huh?
You were in your, 25, 26?
I was 27, I think. Just unbelievably gorgeous. She was a cartoonist.
Yeah.
You know, she used to draw me little pictures of and with the hearts. Oh, God, did I fuck that up.
Yeah.
You know, and I knew it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the problem. It's like, I knew it, and I got it. And I haven't seen her since. She disappeared. And it's like...
Still?
I wish I could just say, you know what? I'm so sorry. You know, that's,
you weren't able to find her for an amends?
No.
Mm.
No.
I guess sometimes it's not supposed to happen.
You know. Well, my sponsor, Frank Russo, and I say that because he told me never to mention his name.
Yeah.
But he said, the best amends you could make to Laura is don't see her.
sometimes that's it. Yeah. And it's like... The God relationship, like you were saying about, like, it's an interesting way to put it that, you know, because of the need to survive, you become almost sociopathic.
Yeah.
And that compounded with being a drug addict, selfishness. Like, I don't think I learned, because of your parents and because of my parents, though different, but their selfishness didn't enable us to understand empathy.
Yeah.
So that's the one thing the program taught. That's the one thing.
Caring for other people.
Yeah, because even reading the book with the sober parts, we're helping the people out. If I go to a meeting, I hear the story, I get choked up all the time. But I do that in life anyways. But I had to learn that by talking to other people, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess some people don't have to learn that. I guess if you have one good parent, you might get it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? You got to remember, another people don't reach the depth of rage.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't reach the depth of being a sociopath. I don't care about him, but I like him.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Those are the people where they're like, you don't know how to live.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's like road rage. Okay. Yeah. I don't give people the finger on the road, okay? Because I don't have rage, but because I don't know what kind of rage he's got.
Yeah. Well, that's like that's a prison thought.
You understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
So it's like I'll respect you.
You want to flip someone off and have you looking down a gun?
I'll respect you as long as you respect me.
Yeah.
Okay. So now if you cut me off, I know you're not going, "Oh, that's Danny Trejo." And,
fuck
and,
him. Yeah.
Okay. That's when you know you've grown. Yeah. When he cuts you off, and you can say, "Well, that guy must really be in a hurry." When you haven't grown, is that motherfucker? I'll get him. You. Yeah. That's.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, go ahead. You be in a hurry. I want to get there.
Yeah.
And it's like that. I don't know how. Yeah. I think that there was a where a lady gave a guy a finger.
Yeah.
And the guy, bam, shot into her car, killed her 5-year old. That lady's got to live with that the rest of her life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, so, dear God, please, people, don't. You got crazies out. You got people like I used to be out there. Yeah. Don't give them fingers. Don't give them peace signs. Just look straight ahead.
You know, a lot of times when that happens to me, what I realize, it's not, you know, he's got to be somewhere. It's like, I've done that.
Yeah. Are you kidding? I ran people off the road.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I chased one guy all the way on the 405 from the Ventura Freeway, the 405, Wilshire to Wilshire and, that real busy intersection.
Santa Monica?
Westwood.
Oh, Westwood. Oh,
Wilshire
and
Westwood,
right?
Yeah. And he got stuck, the traffic.
Yeah.
And I jumped out of my car, right behind him, and he had an El Camino.
Yeah.
And I threw open his door, and this guy looked at me and says, "I'm having a really bad day, man." And all of a sudden I was like in the front of a courtroom.
Yeah.
And the judge was saying, "Mr. Trejo, you beat this man severely. Why?" He gave me the finger. but then wait, I looked, this guy's got a clean record. I got assault with a deadly weapon, attempted murder, assault with
And you go, and that's why that's why you're gonna spend the rest of your life in jail.
I told you.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry. Yeah. And I went back to my car.
Oh, good one. Thank God.
You know what I mean? So it's like, it's there.
Yeah. No, yeah. And like, I think that, you know, the regulation of it, which is, you know, service and a constant contact with a power greater than yourself that you, you know, lean on a lot. I mean, you really make God responsible for a lot of your life. And your concept of God is your own.
Yeah.
But you credit God with all this, and you credit, and like, and you read the signs, like, you know, I know that feeling too. I don't do it as much as I used to, that like when you got the tumor, you know, and you were feeling sorry for yourself, and then you go into the room and there's a commercial for Children's Cancer Hospital,
God,
and you're like, okay.
I got
like
it.
The constant check on the self-pity and the grandiosity.
And you got to remember that I had people, I got Mary Maticle, my secretary, okay?
Yeah.
This lady, we go to Cedars.
Yeah.
The doctors are talking about, I got 3 appointments, blah, 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 blah,
chemo.
Blah, 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 blah. Yeah. And I'm like, I got to go to 3 different, I never would have made it.
Yeah.
Do you understand? This lady picked me up, took me out.
Because you're stubborn.
Yeah. Huh?
And you're stubborn, you wouldn't have gotten it.
Well, it's not only that I'm stubborn, I get frustrated.
Yeah.
Really easy. And I got to go to 3 different places. You know?
Yeah. And also your sense of death is different than regular people. But you don't want to die.
No.
You are afraid of death.
Oh, of course. No. But listen.
Yeah.
Then they find spots on my lungs. And it says, "Danny, we wouldn't even bother with these spots if it wasn't for your history." I said, "You mean they're not growing? Well, we don't know." I said, "Well, let's see if they want to do a biopsy." And I said, "Well, let's see if they grow, you know?"
Yeah.
And while I'm talking to him, making sure that we're going to wait till they grow, Mary's making an appointment for me to come in and get them taken out.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And
taking care of you.
So I go off and I'm thinking, okay, well, we'll just see what happens. And then she picks me up a week later and we go back and I'm back in the hospital taking them out. I mean, I beat brain surgery.
I know,
because of the people that...
With the stroke.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, all these stories they're in the book and they're great. Now, the story about how you got into show business is great. But I do love the story. You know, people can read those stories or hear them. But the story about, I thought the stuff about Edward James Olmos.
Yeah.
That first meeting when they were doing that movie.
Yeah.
That, right, to me, that's the real confluence. That's where the rubber meets the road in terms of who you are now, who you are then, and what, you know, loyalty and respect means, both going forward and backward. Like, you know, he's doing a movie about what's the guy's name?
Cheyenne.
Yeah, the head of the Mexican mafia. Yeah. And you knew these cats your whole life from prison and from growing up with them. And he's doing this movie that ain't quite right in the story, and he wants you to be in it.
Yeah.
And you're like, you know, this we got to check this through, man.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have it.
I got a call to show you how.
What's the movie called?
American Me.
Yeah.
That was the movie.
Right.
And I got a call from a guy named Joe Morgan.
Yeah.
Who actually was the main guy.
Yeah.
Then in the Mexican Mafia.
Because they knew he was making the movie.
They knew. I met with him and his manager or whoever it was.
Almost. Yeah.
At Jerry's Deli.
And it bothered you that he was dressed up in the cholo outfit.
Yeah, it did, really did.
Yeah.
But see, I always thought, because a lot of, in Hollywood, people don't accept me as an actor. They still accept me as an ex-con. You know, that's okay with me. The check cleared.
He'll bring authenticity to the thing.
Yeah, but the check's cleared. You understand? Yeah. So I don't care. You know, and it's not, how do you say it? I love the people that respect me.
Yeah.
You know?
Sure.
The people that don't, I don't, I don't.
Whatever.
Okay, so, and Edward just called me because he read the book.
Oh, yeah.
And he said, Danny, I don't remember some of this. I said, well, then if, because he's being interviewed a lot right now. And I said, well, what do you, then say you don't remember it.
Yeah.
You know? But I thought
he's being interviewed because of this?
Yeah. I don't know if it's, I can't be because of this, you know, but I think he's getting a lot of heat right now. And so I had a meeting with him and he said an FBI agent the first in the morning at Jerry's Deli.
Yeah.
That afternoon, my cousin Sal calls me and says, hey, Danny, do you know Joe Morgan? I go, yeah. You know, because he says, are you okay? I go, yeah. What are you talking about? He says, he wants to call you. He wants to talk to you over at Eddie Bunker's at 5 o'clock today.
Oh, the Eddie Bunker story is great. That's in the book. We can't even get in.
Yeah. And so he says, I says, all right, are you okay? Because Joe Morgan don't call anybody unless he's saying, you know, you're dead.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I'm fine. I've known Joe a long time. So Eddie called me at 5.
Eddie's, yeah.
And he's, hey, I understand you had a meeting with Edward James. I had a meeting that morning.
Yeah.
Joe's in prison.
Yeah.
Okay. That afternoon I get a call. And yeah. He says, I hear you're up for that movie, you know, America Me. I said, Joe, I'm up for both of them. I'm up for Blood In, Blood Out, too. He said, Danny, which one are you going to do? I said, I'm going to do Blood In, Blood Out. Oh, yeah, that's the cute one.
Yeah.
I never forget what he said. It's a movie about gangsters killing. Oh, that's the cute one.
Yeah.
You know? But we didn't disrespect anybody.
Right.
And we told the truth. We were la onda. I walked into clubs where Mexican mafia are. They're there, and I see them. When I walk in, they'll go, Trucha, la onda, and they'll stand.
Yeah.
Because it's a joke. They weren't disrespected in a sense.
Right, right.
And so Edward called me a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
And said, you know, I don't remember. Well, then say you don't remember, but all I said was the truth, and you know it.
You know?
And the
bottom line was he was manipulating the story for the movie's sake, and the disrespect was it wasn't the real story. And if the story points that he wanted to have in the movie were true, it would bring a disrespect to Cheyenne's memory
and to his family, his friends.
And so you were doing the right thing by the loyalty.
Of
the community, the neighborhood, and
exactly
the system,
and what Edward James said was, well, theatrically, you're not working with theatrical people. These are real people. Let me write a story about George Washington and say he was gay.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, wait a minute.
And they do that.
A lie.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It was just like it was to me. It was compelling because, you know, it's like
it was ego.
It was ego, but people who don't know the inside, they don't realize, like, there are people letting you live. And if you're going to fuck with them.
In fact, he won't admit it. I saved his life. I actually went to the people that wanted to kill him and said, you know what, man, we can't do that. You can't do that. It's like, this guy is an icon. He's a big member of the Chicano community, and he's done a lot for us, you know, and you know, so extort some money out of him. So. I don't know if that happened.
Get a payday. Yeah, yeah. Well, I just thought that was great. And but you did go, you did later say, you know, what you just said, that, you know, this is, you know, he did good things.
I even told, you know, when he was on the phone, I told Edward, you don't understand. You and I could have done so much for this Latino community in film.
Yeah.
You know, me and you together, we'd have killed him, you know, but you have never, he's never kind of, he says he has, but it's strange. The first time he's ever called me was
freaking out. but you also said that, like, you know, he said that if you do the other movie, you can't do my movie. So there was he made two camps, and it wasn't community thinking.
No.
Yeah.
Not at all.
But, you know, that's that. And, you know, you made a lot of movies, and Machete made you famous. It is the first, you know, Chicano superhero, and Robert Rodriguez and you were tight, and you'd redefine Chicanos in cinema. And that movie, they like, when we, like I said at the beginning, when we worked together, it was like you walking down the street of Highland Park, like, whole families coming to windows, Machete, you're waving like you're the president. It was great.
I went, you know, it's funny. I took my, I started a record label, and I took my singers, Jasmine, Twixie, and Tara New. We took them all to the Long Beach Civic Auditorium and to Pomona, where all the immigrant kids are.
Yeah.
And, put a show for them, and it was like so beautiful.
Yeah,
some of the staff there said these kids haven't smiled since, and now look at them; they're all jumping up.
And you give them hope.
Yeah, we welcomed them. We just said, "Well, you're all welcome. We love you."
Yeah, and then the restaurant game is something you got into. Like, I didn't know how that happened. I had a hard time believing you were like, "I'm going to open it," but someone approached you with the idea.
Well, no, I did a everything good that has happened to me has happened as a direct result of helping someone else. I did a low budget movie for a director named Craig Moss, who I adore. Okay,
yeah.
And this guy was trying to get me to do this movie. I had a chance to get $25,000 on this other one, right?
Yeah.
And I'm telling my agent, and Gloria says, "Danny, I think this might be pretty good."
Yeah.
"I think this might do pretty good."
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah, but you know, it's all about the Benjamins over here." And she, "Well, you know how women do when they know you're screwing up, they go like, okay, well, then fine, do what you want to do." So, okay, I'll do it. So I do this movie. Turns into a trilogy. I make four times the money.
This is the badass movie?
Yeah, badass, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I meet Craig Moss, but I also meet the producer, a guy named Ash Shaw, who saw that I like good food.
Yeah.
You know, I'll eat good, I won't eat processed food. You know, go to fast food. And on a low budget movie, a lot of times they'll just buy, you know, 50 hamburgers, and I'll say, you know, give me a salad, I'll get a salad. Yeah. You know. And so, Ash says, "Danny, you eat really good." I say, "Hey, come on, I'm 74 years old. I better eat good." You know
yeah.
So I think I was 73 at the time. And then he said, "Why don't you open a restaurant?" Jokingly, I said, "Trails Tacos."
Yeah.
So two movies later, he brings me a business plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, I opened it. If it doesn't have killing in the first couple of pages, I don't care. It's not exciting. I give it to Gloria. So if it wasn't for her making me do this movie, she didn't make me, but she suggested it real strongly.
Yeah.
You know, kind of like, if you don't do it, I'll hate you for the rest of your life. But,
it's up to you. But it's up to you.
Yeah. But so I do this film, and then I wouldn't have met this producer. And I wouldn't be in the restaurant business.
And how are they going? They still good?
Fucking great. Yeah. I'm going right there for lunch. What are you doing for lunch? Let's go.
So that's good, man.
I get to eat for free.
And I think that the towards the end of the book and the struggle that you had, but then the struggle that Danielle, your daughter, and Gilbert had, you know, like the Gilbert story, your son's story, where you, that horrible feeling of you know, having recovered yourself and being so big in the recovery, you know, community, and then your son can't kick the dope and he's out there on the street. Like, it sounded like, you know, he was not going to live.
You know what? I credit. So does he. I credit Mario Castillo for saving his life.
The dude you met in Quentin? That's a great story, too.
On Blood In, Blood Out.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I tried to get him in the movie, but he couldn't get in the movie because the powers that be Joe Morgan and the rest of them says no Sureños can work on any movie.
Because it was a northern, it was not, it was the other.
No, it was the Edward Olmos deal that was going on.
Oh, okay,
so yeah. So they just threw a blanket on the whole thing.
Yeah. But he became a good friend to you.
Yeah, my best friend.
Yeah.
My best friend.
Still?
He works for me. He's like my assistant, just takes care of everything. I couldn't move without
him. I think
him.
I met him when you did my show. He's been on it a while.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, he
was there.
Big guy.
And his son, well, it's so funny because he looks, if you look in the dictionary, Cholo Gangster.
Yeah.
He's got his picture.
yeah. He was like,
And he's short, but he was pressing 425 in the pen, yeah.
But I just thought, like, you know, man, like that, you know, there's that part where you'd speak to the kids about, you know, when you were kind of worried about Gilbert and you were powerless and you got, you know, that's the other program. I mean, that's the Al-Anon thing. There's only so much you can do, but it worked
out. Chispas Sandoval was my mentor as far as getting me to speak at different places.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was
a
member of the Mexican Mafia.
Yeah.
He got out.
Oh,
went
right,
to Christ,
right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But he took me to this high school.
Yeah.
And I was going to speak, and I was so worried about Gilbert because I couldn't find him.
Right.
And I told him, Chispas, I can't talk.
Yeah.
I can't, man. I can't. It's like, my son's out there. He might be dead right now. And I'm going to tell these kids how to stay clean. And Chispas looked at me and said, maybe God wants these kids to hear it from a parent's view.
Oh, man. And you did it.
I did. The kids were crying. They were, there was tears. You know, like thinking about their mom and dad.
Yeah, yeah.
And I told them about, you don't know what it is to wake up in the middle of the night, drenched in sweat, knowing your kids, you know, in an alley somewhere.
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Wow. And so, God, afterwards, me and Chispa went, he said, you know what? That was the most unbelievable speech I've ever heard.
Yeah. Helped out
my parents. And, you know, by the grace of God, man, my son's clean. There was a little girl that had a recovery center and took him in right now. And it was up in Lake Arrowhead.
Yeah.
So as we're taking him up there, you know, he passes through the cloud.
Yeah.
I guess all plans of escape are out.
Yeah, you know? He kept his sense of humor. So, yeah, but, you know, you talk early on, too, when he, you know, even though you're struggling, he was very into films, and then you made that movie with him.
Yeah.
He wrote the movie.
From a son. The most heaviest thing I've ever done.
But, like, he drove you over here. Let's get him in here for a minute. And
he's awesome. I kept trying to get him in front of the camera, and secretly he learned everything behind the camera.
Yeah, but he obviously loved movies.
Oh, God, he loves them.
Hold on, let me go get... Yeah, go ahead.
When I first met...
Rodriguez? Or?
We were with... we were doing Machete, and we were doing... I was with Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
And I'm taking my kids to dinner with Robert De Niro, and I tell him, now, come on, guys, don't be fucking around. I'm just Robert De Niro.
Yeah.
So we're going to be having your conversation.
Yeah.
So we sit down with Robert De Niro. First thing Robert De Niro asked is about some French
auteur.
Director, somebody, you know, blah, blah, blah.
He was saying that Rodriguez was an auteur.
Yeah, and I just looked at him, you know what I mean? And Gilbert said, oh, well, blah, 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 blah. And the rest of the night literally was spent with Robert De Niro discussing film, projectors, sound with my son.
Yeah.
I was so impressed with him.
Yeah.
I've always been impressed with Robert De Niro, but I'm listening to my son. I want to say, how you learn that shit?
So, Gilbert, I was asking your dad here earlier in the episode, I'm like, how'd you feel about how, because it's a personal thing, and he's telling your story, and it's heavy, man. And when you look at that, you can own that stuff now.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally, yeah.
How'd you get out of that? I mean, you were in a pretty deep drug hole.
Yeah, I mean, I was, you know, I mean, it's, for me, I've always kind of seen, like, I was raised with sort of like AA and sort of like, you know, the idea of a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
You know, and.
Right.
And this alternative, and that's kind of like, you know, I almost spent all this time running from it.
Yeah.
And
because that was a way to rebel against him.
Yeah, it was like I didn't have like a Christian God or a Catholic God or a, you know, I had a God of my own understanding to like, nah, man, you know, like AA was like the religion of our house, and not in that it's like a religion, just it was the, you know.
You knew the score.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I got caught smoking weed. I didn't even get caught smoking weed. My mom found a single seed in my room when I was 11 years old. Yeah. Yeah. And it was like, you're going to an AA meeting, you know, and like sitting there and listening to, you know, so, but.
And that nothing will make you hate it more than that.
Yeah. When I was like 11, sixth grade. And you can't understand the, but you know, then once it gets deeper and deeper and deeper and I started to feel like, you know, I wasn't this like, you know, potential that everyone said I had, and I wasn't this, and I was like walking around and thinking like I had no shoes on, and I was on Santa Monica near Normandy outside of this 98 cent store, like just past Western, trying to get like some water to use to make a shot big enough to just end it. I was like, I'm done. Yeah, I was like, I'm done. And this old Mexican man threw me out of his store, and I was sitting on the curb, and a friend of mine had sent someone to look for me, and they found me sitting there like on this curb, totally blacked out. I did it, and it didn't
Didn't kill you?
It didn't kill me. No, I was just sitting there. It's a, you know what's crazy?
Your tray house didn't have to go down easy.
the place that I was at was this 98 cent store, old Mexican man, only like, you know, everything was covered in dust. And now it's like, I drive by it, it's a Zumba class. It's painted bright green. I'm like, wow, man, I tried to kill myself in that Zumba studio. But no, and then a friend of mine just kind of like dragged me around until I regained my sea legs or whatever. It took like 3 days, and then passed me off to my dad and them. And he was actually a drug dealer of mine. And I was like, yeah, man, like I'm dead. And he was like, no, dude, you're getting sober. Yeah. he was my dealer. And
that's
he,
when the dealer says that, you know.
It's, it's over. They passed me off. And then I got home and I was like going to, you know, rehab the next day, and I was like, hey man, I'm gonna come meet up with you, like da 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 da, and he's like, no dude, like you leave your house, you're gonna die. And then I called the next dealer down the line, and he was like, nah man, he said he said he wouldn't give me anything anymore if I, you know.
Were they afraid of him, or were they just worried about you?
Well, they all got chased away from, they're all so, all these dudes are sober now, and they all like, you know, in their AA pitch are like, yeah, I remember the first time Danny Trejo chased me away from his house. It was a sobering experience. but no, everyone, the one dealer above everyone around was like, I'm cutting off anyone that sells anything to Gilbert tonight, because he's got to go to rehab tomorrow. And
it saved your life.
7 years this month.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you. And
you know, in the book, he talks about, you know, the love for movies. And I talked to a friend of mine, or I texted, who said you're, you know, a great upcoming filmmaker. And the story in the book about the film you wrote about, you know, that father and son.
From a son.
So that was... When did you write that, and how did your experience shape that? Was that something you needed to get out of you, the story you had to tell?
Yeah, my best friend, his name was Daniel Gershon. He passed away right when I got sober. It was like, you know, 2 months after I got sober, he passed away. And
from dope?
Yeah, and we'd had a lot of experiences together, and we, you know, it was like... you know, he was in a room alone, and the only thing missing from that room was me, in my opinion, you know. And like, and so, you know, I had like a lot of survivor's guilt about it, and a lot of weird, and then I'd kind of, you know, my dad, when I got sober, he was like, you're better now, come on, that's great, you know. And never like, it's really weird, because this book is the first time he's ever like been emotional without a camera on. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
you know, it's like.
So when you read this, did you cry?
I mean, I was there when he was writing it. I was like sitting in the car when he was like, so I'm going to talk about this, you know?
Yeah,
and we shared those.
Yeah.
I'd never seen him cry before we filmed the movie.
Yeah,
actually, because it was like, you know, like, you have permission to cry because it's not about us. It's about this fake family and this.
Well, I like that whole dynamic where, you know, at first he's like, you know, that's enough. And you're like, I'm the director.
Yeah. I'm like, hey, man, you gotta.
Yeah.
Even if you don't think so, like, act like I'm the director.
Yeah, don't fuck with me, man.
Everyone else here doesn't think that it's okay to put me on timeout.
Like, yeah. but it's weird because 10 years ago, he couldn't have done that and you couldn't have done it,
you know,
just because of the dudes you've become. And so you saw that emotion come out of him. But it wasn't the stuff, it wasn't specifically your story, but it was a story that had enough
of it. You know what? I asked him. How would you get this, Gilbert? He's dead. We lived it.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's so many people's stories. Right, you know what I mean? Like when I had about a year sober, we were eating at a restaurant by my dad's house that we always go to. And like, he was like, man, you know, Gilbert's got a year sober. And he was like crazy excited. And the waitress was like, oh, that's, you know, I just lost my son.
Oh, my God.
And like, and then she'd mentioned, you know, the school he went to in Utah when he was 15, it was the same one I went to. She mentioned the rehab he went to when he tried to get sober the first time. It was the same one I went to. And it was like all the way down the line, and they'd like found him in his car. He'd been there for 3 days the week before. And we're sitting there like, you know, having pancakes because I got a year sober today. And like, and that's like, you know, so I wrote the whole movie in a single day. It just kind of like came out. Because it felt like it needed to,
and
the production was more what I was excited about. It was like going out with my dad and figuring out, you know, how to be like open and honest about our feelings. And you know, I played the son so that the me that I had wanted to sort of kill could like watch him go away.
Yeah.
You know, and and like we buried that dude, and I don't ever have to be that dude again.
That's amazing. And you got it sounds like he got sober just under the wire before all that fentanyl started.
Oh my God. I mean it's been insane. The last 7 years basically, like 2014, 15, 16, just nonstop.
He's
like
sober.
It's a new epidemic.
22 years I got 22 years in August.
So congratulations. August,
I'm August 23rd.
Yeah, what do you got, like 50?
52.
Whoa. Original. Well, you know, it's just that I'll tell you, man, the book was great on a lot of levels. I'm glad you guys worked it out. I'm glad you're okay. Are you working on a new movie?
Right now, I've been doing a lot of music videos. Like,
Is that how Allison knows you?
Yeah.
Okay. He just directed me and David Hasselhoff in a Starcrawler video, and it was
That's gonna be funny.
Yeah, cool. It was really exciting.
They sent me the one of the records. Yeah, your girlfriend, what's her name?
Arrow DeWild, yeah.
Yeah, and she's a great performer. It's great, man.
Yeah.
Good rock band. Yeah. Well, I'm so happy for you guys, man. What a journey for both of you, and the book is great. I'm looking forward to seeing more of your work. And good to see you again, man.
I'm good, man. Thank you. It's been great.
Thanks, pal.
It's been great. Let's do it again.
Okay, pal.
You know,
thanks, man.
So you're my sponsor.
Okay. I couldn't handle it. I felt uncomfortable with that, but we did it. It's a good episode.
That was a great episode.
It was funny. It was not a great day for you with those allergies.
Oh,
but,
God. Yeah. Terrible. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
All right. Take it easy.
God bless you.
Danny Trejo. That's the dude and his son, Gilbert, the director. What a treat. Really was. It was great to see the family together, to see them together, to see everybody sober. The book, Trejo, My Life of Crime, Redemption in Hollywood, comes out tomorrow, July 6th. I don't have a guitar with me. I don't have anything with me. I don't have a harmonica with me. I don't want to play mouth trumpet. This altitude's rough, man. Can you hear the rasp in my voice? Is that what it is? Or am I okay? Am I okay? Boomer lives! Monkey! LaFonda! Cat angels everywhere! Yeah. Okay.